Hey there, everybody. This is Doug, and you're listening to QS Cast. I'm joined here today by Kelly.
Hey, guys.
And also by Chaz.
How's it going?
Today we're going to be continuing our discussion about a lot of really cool Battle for Zendikar spoilers. We have some strategies that go with them, some financial tips. If you're an insider on QuietSpeculation.com, you're hearing this cast when it came out. If you are not an insider yet, you're hearing this cast a few days after it was released, so if you want to get in on it as soon as it comes out, go to QuietSpeculation.com, and you will be able to find out about all sorts of different services we offer for people who want to free roll on Magic and make their hobby pay for themselves. We think there are a lot of great opportunities in Battle for Zendikar, by the way, both in new cards to pre-order as well as in old cards that have gotten a bit better. So I wanted to lead off today one of the cards that really excited me that I was totally down on and didn't like, and then the more I thought about it, the more I thought it was pretty interesting, and that card is Noyandar, Royal Shaper. He is 3 and a white and a blue. He's a legendary merfolk ally. I don't know why he's an ally. I don't know why he's a merfolk. He's a 4/4. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you awaken a land, make it a put 3+1/+1 counters on it, and that card gets haste until the end of turn. And you can, so where's your mind going? It looks like Talran the Sky Summoner, so it may be a control finisher. You can awaken one land and put counters on it, make it a 3/3, 6/6, 9/9. That stuff doesn't excite me, though. What excites me is playing this card with Jeskai Ascendancy in Standard. Now, here's why. When you awaken a land, it has haste. So presume that we have a board where we have Jeskai Ascendancy out, and we have Noyandar. And we pass the turn, we untap, or maybe we have an extra mana up. So we cast our first spell, and it's, say, a shock. So we can awaken a land. The Jeskai Ascendancy, we stack the triggers so that the Jeskai Ascendancy is below the Awakening, so we awaken the land, and then we untap it with Jeskai Ascendancy, so now we've got an untap 4/4. We tap our land, we play Magmatic Insight, we discard another card, we stack it the way. Now we have two creature lands, they both untap with Jeskai Ascendancy. Now we cast a two-cost spell. Do the same thing. Now we have three lands that are untapped. Now we treasure cruise. Now where are we? We're running that engine forward, and we have, let's say, a 4/4, a 5/5, and a 6/6 out. And then they all have haste, so that means you can attack right then and there. And that gets really interesting for me, because we've seen Jeskai Ascendancy flirt around at the edges of Standard. And we've also seen the sort of shell of just play a whole bunch of good cards together to draw cards in the Sphinx's Tutelage decks. So I'm pretty interested in this, and I'm also interested because you can do things like run the new Wrath of God variant or the End Hostilities variant, I guess it is, which is Planar Outburst, which says destroy all non-land creatures. So all of your lands can survive through it, and even if your opponent has blockers, you can swing through. You can awaken things with it if you want. And also this morning I went back and I read Tragic Arrogance, which is a card I think you have to reread every time you cast it. And Tragic Arrogance says every player sacrifices non-land permanents. Ergo, if you have creatures that have been animated with this guy, you can name him as your creature, and then none of your creature lands die. So you can use this as a one-sided board wipe if you want. What do you guys think of that? That's been pretty outside of the box thinking on that
guy. Wow. Yeah, it surely is. One thing to note is that Jeskai Ascendancy triggers on any non-creature spell. Noyandar only triggers on instants and sorceries. But pretty much everything you said works. It's amazing. It's a really great piece of synergy. Jeskai Ascendancy is super cheap right now for such a ridiculously powerful combo enabler. And great looking out with Tragic Arrogance, too. You're right, that's a card you should reread every time you cast it, because it does something completely different. And I think it would be very tragically arrogant to cast it and assume you know what it does on any given board. Because whatever the board looks like when you cast it, its effect is going to be completely different.
Yeah,
I think you hit the nail on the head. With
is this card a modern playable thing, a modern Jeskai combo? I don't know. You don't have Treasure Cruise.
Too expensive. Too expensive.
Yeah, I guess you don't have to run trash like Fairy Conclave or Fate Stitcher, or win Zendikon, God forbid. So maybe you have an edge there. Maybe you have a good plan B. I just love the idea of trying this guy in Standard and being like, I'm going to be playing 4 Tragic Arrogance, 4 Planar Cleansing, and oh, by the way, I have a combo kill in my deck because I play Jeskai Ascendancy, and I'm just like going to make a whole bunch of lands into creatures and then wipe the board and attack and kill you, like all in the same turn. That seems pretty brutal.
Yeah, I think that the appeal of the card is undeniable, but it remains to be seen what will really come to pass. I think that the play here is to maybe build up your position, go a little overweight on Jeskai Ascendancy, and whatever happens with this new card, don't pre-order it, don't bother. It's I don't even see a pre-order price yet as of Monday afternoon, but whatever it is, it'll probably be too high, unless it's something stupid like 50 cents. Sure, 50 cents, grab it, but I don't think it itself is going to be a crazy format-defining card. It's a 4-4 for 5 mana.
Yeah, your pre-release will be a wash in this card.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm actually seeing the pre-release right now. It's at 99 cents.
Yeah, still. I mean, maybe if you really think it's got legs...
if you want to play with it in the first week, go for it.
Yeah, it seems like one of those cards where at 5 mana, it needs to do something more than maybe combo with Jeskai Ascendancy to be valuable. And I think rares in this set, as we've talked about, are really not going to be passing the $2 to $3 mark without being format staples. I mean, looking at Khans of Tarkir, we can only think that, like, yeah, this is going to be a similar situation where the market is really saturated with powerful rares that are worth a buck or two.
So I wanted to also, on that regard, talk about the new enabling land for allies, which is Ally Encampment. Reminds me of Sliver Hive. And, Chaz, I wanted you to lead the conversation on this one. We were talking about how it's dropping to a dollar or two. And tell me why you like Ally Encampment.
Well, I like Ally Encampment because I've been kind of alluding to this, and I was fairly confident that Battle for Zendikar would give us enough support to create a modern, viable ally deck. We just saw allies in a recent tournament do fairly well, and now we have a land support. So I think that's a really good sign of being modern viable. We just saw Slivers with their own kind of land propelling them into a viable tournament finish. Maybe it was kind of just a one-time thing, but it kind of seems like it was good enough to continue with its success. So I like Ally Encampment. The pre-order right now is $199. I don't think that's a buy, specifically because there's just going to be so many of them. There's going to be a lot more of them than Sliver Hive because it's in this set particularly. But I think you can be really hopeful about and optimistic about allies being more viable than even we were seeing in this past tournament with Ally Encampment. It's just a really good card for the tribe.
One thing that comes to mind is that, you know, what's the first card you reach for when you're playing Tribal Magic is Cavern of Souls, because the one thing you hate is always counter spells. But, you know, Cavern's a $40 card right now, and if you want to be playing allies, well, it's more than 40. If you want to be playing allies, you want to have lands that enable it. So where does the mind go? It goes to things like Ancient Ziggurat, also a surprisingly expensive card. And then, you know, things like Ally Encampment look really attractive at $1 or $2, which I presume it will drop to. And it's great to have a card like that. It's good to have that ability so cheaply, and it's nice to have something that can threaten something like Ancient Ziggurat and be a replacement for it, because this happens to tap for colorless. It means you can play that Aether Vial on the first turn, things like that. So I like that. I think it's cool. I think it's a cool card. And I'm excited to see more about allies. I first had to think, like, why would you ever cash in a land to return an ally to your hand? And I thought, well, I mean, allies count a lot about triggering things off the battlefield. So
yeah, it's a really cheap option to buy. It's the option is fix your mana, and if you ever need to rebuy an ally trigger late game, you can. It costs you almost nothing.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, Slivers, obviously, once their Slivers coming into play, you want your allies coming into play. Sliver Hive's activated ability is 5, I'm pretty sure, and this is really inexpensive. I mean, it's just really good. I have to say, in terms of, you mentioned this card, Doug, Cavern of Souls, I'm just, with another seemingly viable tribe in Modern, I mean, I'm kind of nervous where that card's going to be going in terms of a price. I mean, we already see, like, $100 Liliana of the Veil. Avacyn's Restored is kind of still old enough that a rare of this caliber can command a price above 50. I mean, I'm just saying, because we saw slivers, we have merfolk, goblins could be in and out of viability at some point. We have allies on the way. I mean, you just have all these tribes that are going to be leaning on Cavern of Souls as soon as they become viable. So with that much work, I really like Caverns. Because, yeah.
It's got a possibility of being reprinted, but I don't see any specific set where it would be an auto-include. They could be in this set. It could be in Oath of the Gatewatch. It could be in the next block. Or they could just save it for Modern Masters 3, if such a set even comes to pass. But it's kind of hard to say, yeah, buy this card at $40+, but you're right in that Modern is starting to look like a lot of different tribal decks are going to be pushed, and Cavern's going to be the crux of them all.
I understand it is hard to say Cavern is something that you want to be holding on to at $50. I wrote an article on the site not too long ago looking at a card like Grove of the Burn Willows when Tron was starting to become really popular, and that was even hard to suggest a buy at that point, but with such a low spread, it did end up increasing in price fairly drastically, and I look at a card like Cavern of Souls that's going to slot in more archetypes than Grove of the Burn Willows. So if all these tribes start becoming very viable, I'm sure Cavern of Souls will be a part of each and every one of those deck lists.
One, you know, we're looking at an enabler here for the ally deck. It's interesting to see that we also had From Beyond, and you might remember a while back I was praying for an Eldrazi Scion enchantment like Bitter Blossom, and we got it. It's 3 and a green, it makes Eldrazi Scions every turn, and you can, I think this card is great. It's great as it is, cool. When I say great, I don't mean playable, but 1 and a green, sacrifice it, search your library for an Eldrazi card, reveal it, put it in your hand, shuffle your library. So it's got some great acceleration, and then if you feel like you're in a place where you're ready to cash it in, you can go and get something neat. And I like that. Chaz, I think that you wrote a pretty glowing spoiler review of From Beyond, and I wanted to ask you to talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did write the spoiler article from Beyond to highlight the card. A lot of people were hoping that we get some sort of replacement for Awakening Zone, and I think we definitely got it. For one more generic, you're getting a very good enchantment in From Beyond. It produces 1/1s instead of 0/1s, and you get the added ability of getting an Eldrazi card, not specifically a creature card. You can get any of the tribal Eldrazi cards from the previous Zendikar block. So that's obviously going to be good in EDH or whichever format that you want to do that. And in Standard specifically, you go get a Eldrazi Finisher, a Oblivion Sower, or whatever you need at the time. But I'm really liking this card. I liked it at $199. I didn't really like it that much, but I thought it was good enough. That it could be akin to a Frontier Siege scenario where you get a really good window of this card increasing if it does well. But, you know, that remains to be seen. It's still a really good card, and we saw token-generating card like Thopter Spy Network, which I was really high on in Origins, when the Origins pre-sales and pre-orders and when that was spoiled. And it appears that 4-mana token-generating cards are viable for Standard. So here we have a token-generating card that also works well with cards like you liked, Kelly, like Ghostfire Blade. We now have a card worthy of discussion for Sword of the Animist and stuff like that. And I think this really gives a good case to mono-green Eldrazi Ramp that we kind of saw the first time around in Zendikar. And I'm fairly certain this is going to be a part of that.
Well, yeah, it's got a lot of potential, and the potential only starts with Ghostfire Blade. That's the obvious one when you're cranking out colorless tokens. But on the spoiler, I'm looking also at Smothering Abomination, a card I still think is going to be very, very powerful at the Pro Tour. And From Beyond essentially gives you that sort of padding and that engine you need to make sure that you're drawing extra cards every single turn.
That's so like it's the really old Breeding Pit, Lord of the Pit combination.
Oh, yeah. You know it. And just the ability to have a steady stream of attackers. This is so much better than Awakening Zone. Even at one extra mana, I think it's just straight better. Just cranking out 1/1s is so different than cranking out 0/1s. And then you've got this ability to cash it in for any Eldrazi in your deck, which is crazy. I mean, you can just put it out, crank out tokens, and then when you have enough tokens to cast Ulamog, okay, now it turns into Ulamog.
Well, I think we're being wise to look at the support cards around it. I look at Awakening Zone, which did see a decent amount of play in a deck called Eldrazi Green in Standard, and it was able to use Awakening Zone and specifically use Beastmaster Ascension to swing in with 0/1 Eldrazi spawn that turned into 5/6s, or also to use them to feed Eldrazi Monument. And those two cards combined with Awakening Zone made those 0/1s really good. I doubt that we're going to get anything anywhere near as powerful as that this time around, because I think Wizards learned that they don't want you turning on a card like Beastmaster Ascension very easily. But that's the sort of thing we look for. We look for what can you throw a lot of tokens at? So things like, unfortunately, Grim Heraspex won't let you cash them in, but Smothering Abomination will eat them. There are a bunch of other things you can do. You can also just use it to mount an attack. Assemble the Legion was on the verge of playable when it was in Standard, so, you know, there are chances for this.
And none of those cards, actually, the token producers like Assemble the Legion, those tokens didn't produce mana. I mean, the crazy part about From Beyond is that these tokens are mana producers as well.
Yeah, and I like it, and I guess what we'll have to look at is how hostile the format is to small creatures. And on that regard, I want to look at a card that's very hostile to it, and that is Brutal Expulsion. It's 2 and a blue and a red, and it reminds me of the card Jilt, for all you old-schooler cubers. You can choose one or both. You can return a spell or a creature to its owner's hand, so no, it is not regrowth for a spell or raise dead. It is like a Remand or a Venser Shape or Savant. It just returns it to their hand. Or you can use it to deal the damage to a creature or a planeswalker, and if you kill it, it gets exiled instead. So get some pretty cool effects for 4 mana. Nothing wows me on it.
And make sure you realize that it's both.
You can do both. So it is like Jilt with Kicker. And Chaz, what were your thoughts of this card when you first saw it, and has your opinion changed on it?
I do like this card. I think it's obviously a good value card. This, along with From Beyond, started at $199 pre-order, and those copies went fairly quickly. They were kind of selling out a lot at $199. I kind of saw them restocking and selling out again. So the price has now been raised to $299, and it's still kind of selling. I think it went to $249. Now we're at $299. So on that and From Beyond, I just don't know, like, in the decks that you want Brutal Expulsion, so I'm thinking, like, the Jeskai or Jeskai or whatever you guys want to call it, what people are calling them recently. Is this just better than Ojutai's Command? I kind of feel like Ojutai's Command is a little more versatile. I do like Brutal Expulsion. I understand it can kill a few key creatures, but I mean, 2 damage in a world of 10/10s and 10/9s and 5/4s and these massive creatures that people are seemingly wanting to see the Unwritten or ramp into or something like that. I mean, using the bounce obviously is going to be key, but, you know, then you're stuck with like a 2 damage to something. You can't really direct it at them, so I don't know. I think it's a good card. I'm not saying it's bad by all means, but I mean, what's the upside here? Where does this card end up? I just don't see it being that, you know, $8 to $9 cards when it's effectively Jilt. I mean, it's
right. I don't think we get $8 to $9 rares in this set. I may be eating my words on that, but
yeah.
it's just not going to happen.
If we Origins, do get them, sorry to cut you off. I mean, they have to be really damn good.
Yeah, they have to be Hangerback Walker good, and Hangerback Walker's colorless and slots into every deck in Magic if it needs to. The thing about this card is it does so many different things, but it doesn't do any of them very well, and it can do a lot of them at the same time. So it can
they can really steal tempo on a board. You know, if you do it during their attack step, you return their biggest attacker, block, shock their creature so that either you kill it outright or you block and trade or block and kill it. And then it's exiled, which fuels your assorted other Eldrazi shenanigans, your Ulamog's nullifiers and things of that nature. But, like, at no point am I that excited to play 4 mana for an unsummon and a magma spray. That's a 2 mana. That's, you know, that's 2 cards. That's 2 mana worth of abilities. The exile doesn't really entice me that much. And, I mean, I think this is the kind of card that it's probably not going to be a bulk rare, and it's probably not going to define a format. And, you know, if it was 3 mana, I think we'd be looking at a completely different, much scarier card. It's valuable insofar as its versatility, but I don't know. It's just not gonna. It doesn't blow my mind.
This is like the Mantis Rider of the set. Like, this is the card everybody wants to be $5 to $8, and it inexplicably sits at 2 to 3 for its entire lifetime in Standard.
Speaking of Mantis Rider, over the weekend we learned, or I learned rather, that Mantis Rider is good enough for Modern, and I'm liking foil Mantis Riders down the road for sure.
Tell us more about that, Chaz. Where did you see it show up in Modern, and what changed your mind?
So it was over the weekend on GP OKC, and it was not a prominent list in the tournament, but it was a grinder winner. And I think if it's good enough to be a grinder winner to get you buys for a GP, you know, maybe it's not like the end-all, be-all, like, oh, all of a sudden Mantis Riders in every single Jeskai deck in Modern, but I think if people are considering it, and it did show up as a winner, I think it's worthy enough to consider it for Modern, you know, for as long as Mantis Rider can be included into Modern. I mean, it's still a very good card, even in Modern, so it definitely has all the qualities of being a staple in Modern, the kind of power and toughness per mana cost, so you're getting that as a good kind of on-curve creature. So I do like foils, especially because it was only really $1 extra than the normal versions. So if you're going to use Mantis Rider, I'm sure people will like their foils down the road.
And I also, I want to observe also, as part of this, you know, we're talking about the multicolored spells like Mantis Rider, and I want to observe also, we have seen a variety of really good two-color cards printed already, and things like Ulamog's Nullifier, things like Draenor's Emissary, Skyrider Elf. You know, they're probably going to be draft all-stars no matter what, and some of them might break into Constructed as playable cards. It makes me happy to see Wizards still printing cards that have a pretty good power level. That, for example, Ulamog's Nullifier is the, in short, it's a creature with flash, and if you remove cards from an opponent's exile zone, you can counterspell with it. So that's a pretty powerful ability. They could have easily tacked that onto a rare, but I am happy to see that they are playing things like that at uncommon. And, you know, these are going to be the cards that people reach for to fill out their 36 non-land cards when they're making new decks in Standard.
It also makes Fathom Feeder a lot better.
And Fathom Feeder is one we talked about last week. It's what we called the budget Baleful Strix. It's black, blue, has Death Touch, Ingest, and for blue, black, 3, you can remove the top card of an opponent's library from the game, and then you can personally draw a card. So, especially Ulamog's Nullifier is a card that if you play the bad Strix on turn 2, you attack with it once on turn 3, because hey, it has Death Touch, who's going to block it? You attack again on turn 4, now you've got the 2 cards already ingested, ready to cast Ulamog's Nullifier on curve. So I think people are going to be reaching for that at least to start out with. I don't know whether it's going to be a good color combination, but it's at least something that people will try.
Yeah, you have good points, Doug. I agree with that. I just want to point out real quickly that even from all the spoilers that have come out since the last cast, I still like Fathom Feeder as a rare that I'm more excited about than anything I've seen. Maybe Sands from Beyond.
So we talked about a green mythic last time. I want to talk about another one this time. And this is Green Warden of Murasa. It costs Primeval Titan mana. and it is a 5/4. When it enters the battlefield, regrowth. Return a card from your graveyard to your hand. When it dies, you may exile it. So it's optional. If you do, return another card from your graveyard to your hand. So conceivably, if you have a deck with four of these in them, you can just keep looping them into each other, which is what people used to do with Eternal Witness in the battle days of Standard before they would cast their Tooth and Nail with their Skull Clamp powered things and kill you. I don't think we have to worry about that now, but you still... It's like,
well,
recursive 5/4 well, still suck.
Well, the thing is that we do kind of have Tooth and Nail, and it's called See the Unwritten.
That's true.
It's Green Warden is a 5-power creature, not a 2-power creature like Eternal Witness. But it unfortunately is a 6-mana 5/4. So it's big enough to be a threat, but it's expensive enough that for 6 mana you can do scarier things. So I feel like the real power in this card is when you hit it plus another monster of any variety off of See the Unwritten. Because as soon as he hits play, you get to See the Unwritten right back. And you can just keep that card advantage engine going. I think he, in our spoiler coverage, we said basically, hey, look, finally, something to get excited about for See the Unwritten. And I'm pretty sure that's accurate. He's probably the best green creature outside of Undergrowth Champion that you can hit with See the Unwritten right now. Well, actually, Undergrowth Champion isn't worth hitting with See the Unwritten. It's more of an enabler. But he's still probably the best creature to hit with See the Unwritten in green.
So we're going to hit on the Oblivion Sower Watch of the Week as we've been looking at other Infect cards. And Crumble to Dust comes to mind as one of the cards that really, really excites me for Oblivion Seer. And what do I like about it? So it's Sowing Salt. But it's just 3 and a red. It's devoid. Otherwise, it's just Sowing Salt. But the idea being, you jam a Sowing Salt, or you jam Crumble to Dust, and then on curve you hit Oblivion Sower on 6, meaning you immediately ramp up to 10, plus whatever the Oblivion Sower stole on its own. So now you're an Ulamog mana. You've already nailed one of your opponent's lands. Maybe you have a Jace Vryn's Prodigy out. Maybe you flip it. Maybe you get another one of their lands, and then maybe you top out casting Ulamog and eat 2 more of their lands. That seems really hateful to me. What do you guys think about Crumble to Dust, and is that going to be powerful enough to push Oblivion Sower?
That is hateful. You are very correct. A lot of people have been talking about Oblivion Sower. In his article on Insider this week, Brian DeMars said that it's probably the card that excites him the most, and now I'm starting to understand why. The fact is that this Oblivion Sower may end up actually getting you... I was evaluating it like it might get you a land or two, but with all the other ways to start exiling stuff, now maybe he gets 2 or 3 or 4, but then when you look at a card like this one, this new Sowing Salt variety, that's when things start to get really interesting, because you're getting a meaningful amount of mana acceleration from killing one of their lands, and you're getting a giant monster, and you're getting... You're setting back their mana development, and you're getting landfall triggers. I'm starting to see, Doug, why I believe you said that there was someone who told you that one of the designers was unhappy with Oblivion Sower because they felt like they pushed its power level too hard. And at first I was like, really? No, I don't. How could that be? It doesn't look that good. Now I'm starting to come around to see why this card is as scary as multiple other people have said so. That combo was dirty. It's Crumble to Dust is... it's a really good inclusion in this particular block. It checks all the boxes. And it's great because you know there's going to be so many non-basic lands. This is a great way to punish somebody for playing it. And unlike normal land kill, Sowing Salt was fine. I mean, it's not like you're going to cripple somebody by hitting their dual land with Sowing Salt. But Crumble to Dust, exiling them, and then bringing them back with, you know, on your own side with Oblivion Sower. Yeah, that's just nasty.
Yeah, so to be completely transparent to insiders, since insiders will be listening to this first, I grabbed my copies as soon as I saw this card spoiled. I'm not going to mess around.
Which one did you grab? The Oblivion Sower?
Oblivion Sower, yeah. I think this is going to be Pelucanos Scenario 2.0.
You think so? You pre-ordered them at $5?
No. On TCG Player for... $3.47.
That's really cheap for a mythic rare.
We have to remember that this is in the dual deck, but I don't think that that's an impediment to this card. I'm glad we keep revisiting Oblivion Sower every week. I'm glad we still have cards coming out every week that make it even better. I think that you got to look at the trend line, and that just, that's crazy. I mean, this is probably the Siege Rhino with a set. This is the card that people are going to say, like, well, why would I play that for 6 mana when I can just play Oblivion Sower in every deck?
Very good point. And yet, Chaz, I'm looking at a TCG player here. You can get almost as many copies as you want for under $4 pre-order. Yeah, I don't know that the dual deck price is going to hold the price down that much. There's nothing else in that dual deck worth anything.
There's a couple, but nothing really too crazy, no.
It's during Wildwood, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, but that was really like a $3-ish dollar card that, I mean,
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly, my point exactly. And then Avenger of Zendikar, which is an irrelevant card at this point in the game.
Right, and we had a Primal... Let me actually
Primeval
just
Command.
Yeah, we had If That Betrays. That was a decent one. We had Primal Command, Avenger for Zendikar, which was pointless. Stirring Wildwood. Couple copies of Forked Bolt. I mean, that's pretty much it.
I think that this is one of the few cards where I don't pre-order cards almost as a rule. I just think it's too close to gambling. This has got me as close to pulling the trigger as anything I've seen so far, especially at the $3.50 price point. $5 is a little more risky, but I think I'm starting to understand now why a lot of people whose opinions I trust and respect are saying Oblivion Sower is really, really strong.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, we have hit on a lot of the major spoilers this week. A whole bunch of duds. I don't want to be the guy who opens a Dragon Master Outcast as my mythic. We have a...
They should have printed that as a rare, man.
Yeah, they should have.
I think it's a mythic. They would have angered actually nobody.
Yeah, the card provisionally called Painful Truth, the black draw spell that you pay life, is actually just worse than Read the Bones, which is a common. So there's a few groaners in this set that stop it from being an absolute awesome set with no duds.
Speaking of potential duds, I cried a little this week. I'm not afraid to admit it. I don't think it makes me less of a man. But they spoiled the Orzhov man land, and I wept. Because it's fine. Like, it's not awesome. It's not cool. It's just kind of okay. It's a 2/3 with lifelink for activation white-black 1. That's it. And I actually think it's pretty good at that price. 2/3 can battle through 2/2s, and the lifelink makes it so that you can quickly sort of gain an advantage. But it just doesn't excite me. And when I listened to our recording from last week, we were all talking about how the Orzhov one might have a cool ability, and it just doesn't. They kind of just went, let's just put lifelink on it and call it a day. So, again, another disappointing man land. And I've already got another box of tissues ready for when they spoil the Izzet man lands, because I know there will be more tears.
No, I mean, I agree with you. The second round of man or these lands, and you wanted them to be good, and then it's just like so, like, they're not bad by any means. Like, I'm not saying they're bad, but they're just like not inspiring at all. Especially when you compare them to the first round of them in Zendikar. I'm not really impressed.
Speaking of unimpressed. One card I wanted to hit on briefly was Endless One. It took us 20-some years of Magic, but we finally got the XX for X. I know you guys probably designed this back in 1998 when you and your friends were coming up with cards, and this was probably ruled as too good for the play table, but this card is atrocious now. I don't think that there's any time you want to be... I figured it out. The one time you want this card over a Hangerback Walker is when your opponent has the equally bad Void Winnower out and you just literally can't play a Hangerback Walker, even at zero.
Oh, good. let me play Devil's Advocate with the deck we talked about last week, the one with all the +1/+1 counters. Is there any chance that a card like this sees play alongside Hangerback Walker and its friends in the green-white Hardened Scales deck?
I think it does.
I'm glad you agree, because I'm not as down on this card as you are, Doug.
Because it doesn't double the counters, it just adds one with Hardened Scales.
I know.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's just the thing is that there's cards like Avatar of the Resolute that care about the number of creatures you have with +1/+1 counters on them already. And it would not surprise me if the deck needed to play two of these just to, like, is it always going to be an okay deal? It's always going to be a bear or something to that effect. Like, you can always just sink extra mana into it. And if there's enough cards that care about plus one counters, it might just become an important enabler. That said, I don't think it's going to be a valuable card financially. I think that if you pre-order them at $2, you're looking for pain. But I don't know. I'm not willing to write this one off just quite yet.
So maybe this is the card that you run, like, Arcbound Worker, and you run it out as a 1-1 with one counter on it because it has synergy, and maybe it gets bigger later on. I could buy that argument. I was just looking at it like, why would you ever pay 5 or 8 mana for this thing, even knowing that it scales?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, in that, just, I have Ken Yukihiro's deck list up in front of me. I mean, it's really an X drop whenever you need it. If you want to maybe remove Honored Hierarch for this, or Servant of the Scale, or, you know, you have an extra 2-drop now alongside Avatar the Resolute, a 3-drop, you know, it could just be whatever on curve creature you need. So I think it's fine in that deck.
Yeah, and there's probably more +1/+1 counter shenanigans we can get into beyond what we've already seen, especially if we have more enablers. So I just double-checked Avatar of the Resolute to make sure I wasn't crazy. Avatar of the Resolute only cares about the number of creatures, not the number of counters. So that if you're thinking that that works, it doesn't.
Well, conceivably, you could run this guy out early and then play Avatar of the Resolute, and you'd still have some sort of mini combo.
Yeah, I see him as a copy of the card I can never remember the name of. He's the 1-1 for 1 from Dragons of Tarkir that comes in. He's in 0/0 with +1/+1 counter when he dies. He's the Arcbound Worker.
Servant of the Scale, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's like, I think that this guy is Servant of the Scales number 5 through 8 if you need them, and you're trading the ability to do the Arcbound style, dump your counters, for the ability to scale up later in the game, which I think is actually, maybe you run a mix of those. If you want to run 6 altogether, go 3-3. So, also, just as I'm looking at Avatar of the Resolute here, the spread on Avatar of the Resolute is 7% wide. Right now, TCG player mid-price is 75 cents. Adventures On will pay 70 cents for them. They're only buying a few, but what's interesting in Avatar of the Resolute, while we're on the subject of +1/+1 counters, is that the buy list price has maintained pretty steadily around the 75 cents mark, while the retail prices crash from almost $2 down to the 75 cent mark. And it's really weird that the buy list price hasn't moved at all.
Well, that tells me that Avatar the Resolute could be a very attractive speculation target. If you want to get in, you know that you're only at this point risking 7% of your investment because you could buy them and immediately resell them for that. So, good call, Kelly. I like Avatar. I like when we can showcase for our listeners cards that are from previous sets that get better for new play, as well as cards that are really very low risk plays to get in on.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes what you do when you look at new spoilers is there's so few cards that are going to be worth pre-ordering that the name of the game is really to figure out what existing assets now have a new lease on life as a result. So cards that like Avatar the Resolute, which I'm looking at TCG Player, you can buy 80 copies of this card for 64 cents. Free shipping, that's below buy list. Now, I will caution you, that's not instant free money, because this buy list of 70 cents is only 7 copies deep. The next highest buy list is in the 30s. But even so, like, these are the kind of cards where you look at a 3-2 for 2 with Reach and Trample, and you're already so far in the black of how good this card is, and then it gets bigger with something that's very simple to trigger. Looking at cards like this that look like they were very, very good but never really had a chance to shine, that's what we're trying to do during spoiler season, is to find cards like this that are at all-time lows that shouldn't really have a floor much lower than where they already are.
Well, we've dug through the greatest hits this week, as well as playing a game of convince Doug that cards are not as bad as he thinks. So we've spent about half an hour chatting about this. If you would like to continue the discussion, if you're a QS insider, absolutely drop by the spoilers in our forums and chat with us about these things, either in paper or Magic Online. If you are not an insider, you can still participate in our spoiler discussion. We are covering all of the cards as they get spoiled on QS. You're going to be able to find specific articles for every card that we get spoiled. You're going to be able to join the discussion. We're going to have a great time. And thanks for listening to the QS Cast. And I hope you'll find us and give us a comment and feedback on what you heard today. Until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And you've been listening to QS Cast.